Greetings and welcome to Shnayim Mikra, the podcast series sponsored by the Orthodox Union, hosted by OU.org, in which we examine each one of the podcasts an aliyah of the current parasha, Parashat Vayishlach. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom, and today we're going to look at Chamishi, the fifth aliyah of Parashat Vayishlach, which, of course, is a very tragic piece, and which leaves us not at the end of the aliyah, but at the end of the particular story that occupies most of it, hanging a little bit as far as our understanding of the evaluation of the text's evaluation of the events. It's important to note that Dinah, from the moment of her birth, has not been mentioned, and after this story will not really be mentioned, except as an aside. But Dinah here plays a central role. Again, to review, Yaakov had set up camp just outside of Shechem, according to the Rashbam, in the small town of Shalem. Either way, he is on the outskirts of Shechem and has set up camp, and that seems to be where he is settled in. Again, this is the second point at which Yaakov seems to settle in on his way home without getting all the way back to Beit El, which is where he has been called to return to, or without getting back to Yitzchak, to whom he intends to return. And now Dinah goes out to see what the girls were like. Chazal pick up on the fact that she's the Dinah Bat Leah. The simple read of that is it's foreshadowing which brothers are going to step forward to her defense. They're going to be Bnei Leah. But Chazal pick up on that Leah was the Yatsanid. Leah was somebody who went out maybe in the inappropriate way. So Dinah did the same thing. And to some extent, she was at the root of the troubles that happened. She wanted to see the other girls. Nesi Haaretz here seems to be Chamor. Shechem ben Chamor Achivi, so we know the Chivim are living here, the nations. And it's Shechem, who is the ben Chamor. The Chamor is Nesi Haaretz, the lord of the land, as it were. Vayikach Otah, and we already learned about that in the previous parak when Yaakov bought the land from Bnei Chamor Bishchem. Vayikach Otah, Vayishkav Otah, Vayaneha. He took her, and he slept with her, and he oppressed her. The implication here is that he took her against her will. This may indeed have been an acceptable thing in those times, in that setting, at least in Shechem, because as we see, he doesn't seem to be ashamed of this behavior, and he doesn't immediately set up a garrison against her family, but rather comes to negotiate with them. And he becomes very close to her, feels very close to her. And of course, the sequence here is backwards. He becomes close to her, he loves her, he wants to speak to her, should have come before taking her the way he did forcefully. But the entire picture here is one where he wants to marry her. This is not the last time that we're going to hear a son ask his father to arrange a marriage for him. Shimshon famously does it. And of course, in Shimshon's case, it's the reverse. It's the Jewish man, as it were, asking to take somebody from the outside. Here, Shechem asks Chamor, his father, to take this girl for himself as a wife, meaning to go arrange it, to go do the negotiations. What happens? And in the meantime, Yaakov Shamaki Tiret Dinah Bito Vanav Hayud Nineh Basadeh. Yaakov heard that he had defiled her. Is the defiling the fact that he took her against her will, or is that he's an outsider? We'll learn later, perhaps. Vanav Hayud Nineh Basadeh. And the brothers, meaning his sons, Yaakov's sons, are out in the field. So what we have here is a parallel picture. Son and father. In the case of Shechem, Shechem comes to Chamor, his father, and says, please arrange this. In the case of Yaakov, Yaakov hears about it, and he's silent. He doesn't tell the sons anything. Rachmish Yaakov, Abo, until they come back from the field, he says nothing. In other words, he doesn't act until they come back. What is his silence about? Again, is this Yaakov, Yaakov's unwillingness to confront directly? Is he waiting for his sons to come? So he can come, as is described in Tehillim Kuf Chav Zayin, with all of his arrows in the quiver, all of his sons with him to challenge Shechem. We'll see. In the meantime, the meeting's going to happen. Vayitzei Chamor Abishchem El Yaakov at the very top. So the two fathers meet. Chamor Abishchem, it's important, comes to Yaakov to speak with him. And now what happens in the meantime? They heard about this and they came back from the field. Vayitzavu anashim, they're sad. Vayichal ha'me'arim, they're very angry. Why? Ki nevalasav Yisrael. Now, this is a very strange statement. Nevalasav Yisrael makes it sound like there's a society called Yisrael, and we have certain norms, and this is a violation of the norms. So the word Yisrael here, and according to some of the Tanaim, we almost have to recommend this, is like a later interpolation into the text that, of course, by the time of Har Sinai is a very appropriate thing to say. This is disgusting things. Lishkavet bat Yaakov v'chein lo yeyaseh. Now, what's Lishkavet bat Yaakov? Is the fact that anybody took a bat Yaakov, a daughter of Yaakov, without properly arranging in advance and to have relations with her, or is it that an outsider did? Again, unclear, and quite, we're not sure that we're going to get full clarity through the Parsha. Now, Chamor is not facing Yaakov one-on-one. It's Chamor versus Yaakov and his sons. And his sons are already old enough to be taking care of the cattle. They're old enough to be standing up. A few years have passed now since they've left Lavan. And here he speaks. Shechem b'ni chashka nafsho b'vitchem. And we'll find out, probably Shechem is at the stand also. He has great desire for your daughter. Tnu na ota lo l'isha. So agree to let her marry him. V'itchatnu otanu, marry with us. You give us your daughters, which now, of course, only talking to Bnei Yaakov, because Yaakov has only, they only own the one daughter, unless we expect others. And we'll give our daughters to you, which now speaks to what marriage was about in the ancient world until recently, and continues to be in some parts of the world. It's chiefly about marrying clans together, and about creating financial, political, and sometimes militarily strategic relationships. It's not about romance, etc. So this started with something that we would most closely associate with romance, or at least more akin to lust, but it then develops into a plan to make a covenant or to assimilate this family in. Now, stepping aside from the personal tragedy, if you have to make a decision about whether to accept this offer, realize that there is an upside and a downside. The upside is that this will give Bnei Yaakov an immediate entrance, something we talked about at the beginning of Chayisara. This will give Bnei Yaakov an immediate entrance into taking the land, to owning parts of the land, becoming full members of the society of the land, and to be able to participate. On the other hand, the constant emphasis, both in Avram's case of getting a wife for Yitzchak, and in Yitzchak's case of getting a wife for Yaakov, of not being from the local girls, not marrying into the local polity, whether it's because the Kananim are particularly disgusting or criminal, or it's because wherever you live, you have to maintain a certain sense of otherness to continue the Abrahamic tradition and Abrahamic role, that's the downside here. So let's see how they play it out. V'itam teshevu, and the continuation of the deal is you live with us, v'aretz t'yelifrechem, and the land will be yours, shvus charua v'chazuga. You can live here, you can do business here, and you can take possession here, which of course is a sweet music to their ears. And now, they evidently are quiet. Why? Because Vayomer Shechem al Aviyah v'lacheha emtzachem b'nechem. So Shechem, who is here, speaks up and says, emtzachem b'nechem, I'd like to find favor in your eyes. Which of course should ring in a certain way for them, because they just finished, at least from the perspective of the text, maybe a couple of years ago, but they just finished this big standoff with Esav, in which everybody's trying to find favor in everybody else's eyes. Emtzachem b'nechem, v'ashotamur elai etein, whatever you ask, I'm going to give. In other words, I'll give you whatever you want for Dina. And to make this deal happen. Habu alai me'od mohar u'matan. Mohar meaning a wedding gift. Demand a lot of a gift. Vetena. And then I bet na, and I'll give it kasher tamurli, whatever you say to me. Nudiyatan arali shah, as long as I can marry you. So now they're in an enviable position. Where basically I say, the sky's the limit, you write the ticket, whatever it is, I'll give it to you, as long as I can marry her. So there's a lot here to really invite them to participate in this deal. Now, why does Shechem speak up? And the Vayomer here is very helpful, because by the Vechamor Itam Lemor back in Pasuk Chet, Chamor began talking. Why does Shechem suddenly speak up in front of his father? And why does he say Vayomer? It should be a continuation. Now, of course, the Vayomer here is necessary because we've got a new person speaking, but it's still the same side speaking. Often, in this case, what happens is there's a speech made, and then there's silence on the other side, waiting for an answer. And it's very much recommended here, because, recommended read, Because Hamor says, this is what we'd like to do, this is the offer. And at that point, you would expect either Bnei Yaakov to say, forget it, we're taking our daughter and leaving, or we'll go for the deal, let's talk specifics. But they say nothing. And they say nothing wisely, they want to see how much these people are interested in the deal, how far they're willing to go. What happens? Shechem speaks up. And speaks up probably not so wisely, and with some hate, and impetuousness. He says, whatever you want, I'll give you. And so now, so then they spoke up with deception. Who do they speak to? And this now takes the sting out of the mirmah. They speak the mirmah in with trickiness, with deception, to Shem and Hamor. But who are they speaking to? Shem, who defiled Dina Achotan. Dina, their sister. Right? So that's, let's say Nesel justifies, but that puts their speaking deceptively at some sort of background. By Ralehan, this is their deal. Now, unclear whether all the brothers are speaking together, it's a little hard to believe. Whether it means that one of the brothers is speaking and they all look to him, we don't know who it is. Whether it means that they huddled a little bit and said, came up with a plan. And this is the plan. We cannot agree to do this, to give our sister to a man who has orla, foreskin. It's a shame to us. Why is it a shame? It's going to speak about in a couple minutes. What does that mean? This is how it will work for you. In other words, you want us to live with you. You want us to marry your daughters. You want us to live in this land. You want us to do this with you. You've got to do one thing, which is you've got to have all of your males circumcised. In other words, you all have to become B'nai B'rit. Now, from a certain perspective, this is almost like a gift. If they agree to this, then that means that Abraham's mission has stepped forward about four steps, which is, on the one hand, bringing people into the B'rit, on the other hand, giving us an opportunity to become landowners and members of the land-owning society. And yet, the text identifies this not as a plan and not as a strategy, but rather as a ruse. And then, then we will give our daughters to you, take your daughters, and then we'll be able to be one nation, and we'll live with you, and all will be fine. That's the way that they present it. And if you don't agree, then we'll take our daughter and leave. Now, take our daughter and leave, which sounds like, I'm taking my football and going, you already the quarterback, isn't really that. What it's saying is we're going to take our daughter and leave, and there's no more consequences. Because they're not threatening a war, they're not threatening a battle or a standoff. Rather, either you agree or you don't agree, but if you don't agree, it means the daughter comes with us. They're able to say that because they've seen how far Shem is willing to go for the daughter. Had he not spoken up, it would have been a deal on the table. They say, forget it. They would not have an opportunity to do what it is that they really wanted to do, as we will find out. Now, it's possible that this is a bluff. And they expected them to say, forget it. There's no way we convince the members of the rest, can convince the other members of the town to do this. And therefore, the deal's off. Could be. On the other hand, it could be that they very well knew that whatever the lord of the town demands, the rest of the town is going to go for. Especially when they have much to profit from, to see this very powerful and wealthy tribe coming through, suddenly assimilated into their midst. So Hamor and Shechem both like the idea. Probably Shechem for his own personal reasons, and Hamor perhaps for reasons of leadership and of politics, of being able to assimilate this group into the tribe. So now what happens? The na'ar, which almost assuredly the best way to translate na'ar through Tanakh is not like a kid, but rather as like a prince or like a squire, and you can see it in numerous places. The easiest way to think about it is speaks about elders and representatives of the community and leaders in the community. He didn't hesitate to do this. The sense is not that he immediately circumcised, but rather that he immediately called the town together. And again, we hit the nail right on the head. He was so desirous of Yaakov's daughter, and he was the prince of the family. He was the most important member of his father's household, and he was very desirous of Dina. And therefore, he did not hesitate to do this. So what happened? They went to the gate, which is, of course, where the elders gather. They spoke to the people of the city, and they said the following. First of all, these people, we have peace with them. So we don't have to worry about a war. We don't have to worry about them rebelling against us. They're going to live here. They do business. It's wide in front of them. We will take their daughters. They will take our daughters. Okay? But the only way that they'll agree to this is to be one nation. For us to circumcise as they are. Now, here's the push. You hear that, you're not going to feel very good about it. So what's the next response? What's the next statement? Everything they own is going to become ours. It will be assimilated in. Just do what they want, and they'll live with us. In other words, he's pitching to them what they want to hear, which is the benefit of it, which is to gain all of their property. And these people have a lot of property. What happens? Koyotse Shariro really means the leaders, the people who were at the gates of the city. So they went and circumcised all of the men. In other words, not all of the men were necessarily at the gate, but all of the leaders. Now this is reminiscent for us of another stand between our family and another town where the representatives of the town come to the gate and there's something we want of them. And that is in the other place where we have a purchase. But that is a very different situation. Now Abraham stands with Ephron and it's all very positive. It's a positive negotiation. And there, as I mentioned, very likely the end result is that Avram really is included in the clan. Here, that's the presentation that's given as if. And they're at the Shar, and there's a negotiation, and there's an agreement of what they're going to give up, and what the gain is going to be, and what the cost is going to be. And they agree to do it. What happens on the third day? From here, the famous Mishnah and Shabbat, it says that the third day is the most painful day of Milah. As I mentioned earlier, the fact that Dinah is called Dinah Bat Leah may be foreshadowing to which brothers are going to take up her cause will be brothers who are the sons of Leah. So, Shnei Bnei Yaakov, who's that Shimon v'Levi, who are Achei Dinah, Ishchar, each one took his sword, v'yavol al yir betach, they came to a city that was betach, meaning a city that was sitting there comfortably. By a group called Zachar, they killed all the males. The males couldn't defend themselves because they were all recovering from the breed. And they took Hamor and Shem, his son, they killed them lefichareb by the sword, and they took a dinah from the house and they left. And so they took Dinah and Shechem, which means that, if you will, they reneged on the deal because the people of Shechem did what they agreed to do. And here, of course, famously, and at any point we can interject, the Rambam's famous comments about what justified this behavior, the Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, who says that not only are the non-Jews commanded to fulfill all seven mitzvot in Noach, but that the punishment for violation of any of them is death. And since the people of Shechem cooperated with Shechem's behavior, they were really all liable for death. In other words, because they didn't properly judge him and fulfill the mitzvah of dinim, they were liable for death, and that was to justify this. That, of course, the Ramban has a strong critique against that. Take a look at the Ramban here in the Perek, where he quotes the Ramban, and then he takes him to task for that. There are many, many different comments on the justification of his behavior, if there is justification. That's something we'll see hanging in a minute. In the meantime, before we leave the battle scene, the issue of Chirpa, when the brothers said to Hamor and Shechem, we can't have our sister, marry somebody who has Orla, ki Chirpa hilanu, that's a word that really, it's a much larger piece than we have time for here, but just a couple of little points, is the word Chirpa, which means a shame, as I mentioned in the previous podcast in this parsha. Is something that comes up in several contexts. I mentioned it as derech agav in the passage in Yehoshua, where after Bnei Yisrael do the mass brit milah, God says, "I have rolled away cherpat Mitzrayim, the shame of Mitzrayim." And there seems to be a constant connection, consistent connection, between foreskin and shame. And another place that it shows up is in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yud Zayin, the famous mano a mano standoff between David and Goliath, where David consistently refers to the Goliath as haplishti ha'arel hazeh, this arel, this plishti with foreskin, and he continually refers to Goliath as somebody who has shamed, ashechereif, barachot alim chayim, ashamed the army of God. And so there is a connection there. The connection may indeed be in the notion of slavery, that having a particular brand on you is a mark of slavery. Having the brand that you are the slave of Hashem means you're a slave of no one else. As in Abadai Haim, Lavadim, Lavadim, the Bnei Yisrael are my slaves, they're not slaves to other slaves, they're not slaves to Paro or anybody else. And therefore the brand of being the Abadim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is indeed the greatest sign of no chirpa, of no shame, of slavery to another person. But yet, there's much, much more to say about it, but just a couple thoughts there. In the meantime, we go back to our story. Bnei Yaakov baru al hachalalim. Bnei Yaakov came over the corpses by Avozo Ayir, which means they despoiled the entire city. Asher timu achotam. This is the Rambam's point, Asher timu achotam. The entire city had defiled the sister by not taking the squire of the town to judgment. At Sonam, at Karam, at Chamorahem, at Ashubayir, at Ashubasadel, Akahu, they took everything, all the flock, and all the cattle, and all the donkeys, it was in the city, or in the field, they took it all. At Kol Chilam, all their wealth, at Kol Tapam, at Sheyem Shavu, by Abozu, at Kol Ashubayir, they took all their kids, they took all their wives, women, they captured them, and anything was in the house, so all of the household goods, all the women, all the men were killed, and all the women were taken as concubines or slaves or whatever, and all the children also. And now, the standoff. Notice, Yaakov has not said anything during this battle. Yaakov has also not said anything at the point of the deception with the deal of the breed. Whether Yaakov was aware that it was a deception is another question we shouldn't deal with. But Yaakov speaks to Shimon and Levi now. Achartemoti, you caused me evil. And we would hope at this point that Yaakov, we would think at this point that Yaakov would say, caused me evil. So going back on our word, compare this to Yoshua's behavior in Perek Tet, say for Yoshua, the Givonim, or that this is an immoral act, or there wasn't some other way to do it. Instead, his response is, La'vishem Yosheva Aretz, Bakanim Rapizi, you've given me a bad stink among the people who live here, Bakanim Prizi, Vanim Etemispar. In the meantime, I am a small group, a Tamis Parler, will be a small group of mortals, as it were. Then as they'll all gather and they're gonna gather to kill me, and my entire household will be wiped out. In other words, you have won a small battle and you're causing us to lose the big war because we are not at this point numerous enough to really defeat them. And what's their response? Their response is, should our sister be treated like a zonas, like a prostitute? And the interesting point here is that the text at no point, and this is a common in Tanakh, tells us really whether the behavior was recommended or not recommended, was okay or not okay. We hear that Yaakov has a critique against them, but is his critique really against their behavior or against, shall we say, the blowback from the behavior or the fallout from the behavior or the potential fallout, which turns out not to happen? Now, if the next step is that all the nations gang up on Israel and attack them, then it could be that he's right. The fact that they don't, as we'll see in a couple moments, may indicate that that concern was really not in place. And the other point is that the text gives them the last word. There's much more to say about this, but now I'll just point out that in one of the chapters in my book, I deal with this particular parsha and the judgment of Shimon HaLevi, and how we understand it, the light of Yaakov's words to Shimon HaLevi on his deathbed, Ayin Shem. In the meantime, looking at the next parak, continuing to the end of the Aliyah, Vayomer Elohim Yaakov, Kum Alei Beit El, V'shev Shem. So God says to Yaakov, come now up to Beit El, settle there. You've been settled in Sukkot, you've settled in Shalem, now come up to Beit El. I say, Shem Mizbeach La'el, and Arei Lechem Rocham Ne'esa L'chicha, and make Mizbeach to the God who appeared to you when you were running away from Esa. Remember that. This is why I called you back. And now remember Esav. Esav was an enemy that we've already dealt with since then. We dealt with Alvan, then with Esav, then with Bnei Chamor, and now it's time to come back and complete that circle. So now what happens? That's very interesting. Yaakov turns to his household and says, get rid of all of the false gods. This reminds us of Shmuel, in Shmuel Aleph Perek Zayin. Get rid of all the false gods that you have. Vitaharun, purify yourselves. If you change your clothes, we're going to go through a religious ceremony. You've got to purify yourselves. Why does he have a Lehenechash? The simple shot is that they had taken all of the household goods, which included household gods, from Shechem, and they had all of these things. And therefore, he has to tell them to get rid of them. But he puts it in the context not of, you're not allowed to own this stuff, as opposed to, we're about to go to Beit El, so now it's time to purify ourselves. And Akuma v'na'ale Beit El. We will all go up to Beit El. Remember, God didn't say that. God said to Yaakov, you get up. He's going to bring the whole family up. And he presents it a little differently. He says, we'll all go up, but I'll make him his mizbeach to God who answered me when I was in trouble. That's when he's running away. And who was with me the whole way that I went. And you see that because you're all here and we're safe, etc. Right. Know the Yaakov and call Elohim Echar Shabi Adam. So he gave Yaakov all of the foreign gods, Atam Nezamim, Ashavos Nehem, and the rings that they had in their ears, which evidently were from Abu Dazara. Right. Tonotam Yaakov Tachat Ta'ilah Shem Shem. And he hid them under a big terebinth tree that is near Shechem. And now they're about to travel. That terebinth tree may be related to the one that shows up at the end of Sefer Yoshua, Vayisau. And now they travel. Vayichit, and this is the test, what's going to happen on the way. Vayichit, Tatalim, Alarim, Ashishivotahem, God's fear was on the cities that are around them, Lord Shuach, or Ibn Yaakov, and then chased Ibn Yaakov. Which means that Yaakov was wrong, shall we say, about his concern, or shall we say, he was overly alarmed about his concern that they will be attacked. And indeed, everybody was afraid of them. And now Yaakov came to Luz, which we refer to as Beit El. If you want to take a look at Shoftim Perak Aleph, in the middle of the Perak, the story of Beit Yosef, you will see that for hundreds of years, the locals continued to call the place Luz, even though we refer to it as Beit El. So the text gives us both. He and everybody came there. By even Shomis Beach, he called the makom El Beit El. So he called the place El Beit El. Kishem Nigloi Lav Haimuim Rachom Le'achid. He gave it a name because that was the place that Hashem appeared to him. And in the meantime, we have an interjection. Matamu Dvorah Menekev Yivkam. I think Rebbe Tachat the Beit El, Tachat Alon. Dvorah, who was Rivka's maidservant, evidently she had sent along with Yaakov to be a nursemaid for his children, died. And he buried her under the oak tree by Kashmo Alon Bachut, so they called it the oak of weeping. And here Chazal say this is an illusion, that there was another death, Alon in Greek, being a word similar to other. So Alon Bachut, another crying, and that's the death of Rivka, which isn't mentioned explicitly in the text. And after her death, Vayirai Elohim al Yaakov Od Vavom Padar Aram Vayivarchuto. And now God appears to him again, and he blesses him again. Vayomer lo Elohim Shimcha Yaakov. He says, your name is Yaakov. Lo Yikare. This is what he was told in the midnight wrestling match, but at the end of the night, but now it happens. He says, Lo Yikare Shimcha Od Yaakov. No longer will your name be called Yaakov. Ki Im Yisrael Yashmecha. Now you're called Yisrael. Vayikrachva Yisrael. And God says, your name is Yisrael. By Yom Elohim Ani El Shaddai prayer vases. I am God. You be fruitful and multiply. Goyim Kahal Goyim Yemen Mecca. You have a nation and families of nations come out from you. Umalachim Yichalasachi Yitzeru. Kings are going to come out from you. Now here there may be an allusion to an event that takes place later in Jewish history, which is somewhat problematic, and that is when it's time to have the first king crowned. It turns out not to be somebody from Shevet Yehudah, which you'd all expect, but rather somebody from Shevet Binyamin, which is Shaul. And one of the explanations may be that that's a fulfillment of this prophecy. That Kahal Goyim Yemaka is a reference to Ephraim and Menashe, something to deal with, that will be dealt with later on in Parshat Vayechi. And then Malachim and Chalatzach Yetzeu, because the only child that Yaakov has not yet had is Binyamin. Every other child has already been born. So to have kings spring forth from your loins means children will not get born, and the only one is Binyamin. So it's perhaps in Nevuah, the first child born is going to be born. So the next child born will be the father of kings, and that is Shevet Binyamin. Okay, in any case, we will pause at this point and pick it up with the sixth Aliyah on the next podcast. Everybody should have a wonderful day.